What does it mean to be truly educated? Bell Hooks said, "When we drop fear, we can draw nearer to people. We can draw nearer to the earth. We can draw nearer to the heavenly creatures that surround us." When teachers create structures that drop fear and draw students to them and to one another, they create spaces where students can reach for the stars. And education is about discovering that limitless potential. Dr. Jessica Zeller is an associate professor of dance at Texas Christian University and author of Shapes of American Ballet, and has contributed to several anthologies of dance and blogs at jessicazeller.net. Dr. Zeller places a strong emphasis on building relationships with her students, and it is apparent through her Twitter handle, @JessicaZeller. In this episode, I have the pleasure to learn more about how Dr. Zeller develops interdependent relationships that take her learners beyond the curriculum.
I'm drawn to this ability to create relationships. And in your blog posts on Teachers Going Gradeless, and in your tweets, I just see relationship as the core of who you are as a teacher. And I want to know, was there a point in your teaching career where you realized where you needed to place an emphasis on relationships as part of your pedagogy?
I don't know that there was one moment. It sort of happened over the span of maybe a few years where I started experimenting with some more open-ended, more progressive, if you will, methods for designing my courses. So I spent a semester doing a constructed syllabus where the students and I would build the syllabus as we went through the course, or leaving some open-ended ways for students to do assessment or to design assignments on their own. And I found that as I did that methodologically, it allowed students some space to really step forward. And so they were able to engage with me in a way that they seemed to understand that I trusted their existing knowledge as and I believed it to be important to their work. And I think that was implicit in the methods that I chose, but I never actually said that. And then I, of course, noticed at the same time that there were some students who just didn't really, it didn't resonate with, the process didn't resonate with them. They couldn't, for whatever reason, didn't engage with it in the way I'd hoped. And so I was at about 50-50, where I felt closely related to half the class and a little bit more at arm's length with the others, where I felt that I was sort of tiptoeing around how I would give them feedback, trying to figure out what was working for them. And at some point, I just got really frustrated with the fact that I couldn't reach all of them the ways that I was reaching some of them. And so I just decided one semester, I don't remember, it was with one particular class, I just decided to lay my cards out on the table completely and say from day one, I trust you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I looked at them and I just said, I trust you. I don't use the traditional approach of walking into the classroom and feeling antagonism toward the students as though they're going to try to usurp my power. But I decided to just be as open as possible and see what happened. And by saying I trust you, by saying I value the experience and education you've already had and the knowledge you bring to the room, that I value your ideas, and I'm asking you to lead the process of learning that's happening in this course, that I think your learning is the most important thing in this course. And that sort of set them aback. This whole class of students just sat there and was almost in shock that they'd heard it come out of my mouth as the, you know, the quote unquote teacher. And from then on, I found almost every student, they met me more than halfway. They were really open and really engaged and really willing and shared themselves with me, and I shared myself with them in ways that I never would have expected. But that was, it kind of just came out of a frustration that I couldn't find a relationship with some students and I didn't quite understand why. So I thought I'd have to be the one to open first as the person in power in the room. the person with the red pen, that they needed to see me open up to them first, and then they might be more willing to be open about their process with me.
Yeah. So you develop dancers. Why is establishing relationships so important in that process of developing dancers?
So dance is a really interesting, interesting location to be in a university setting, because we think of dance training as falling outside of traditional academia, but our training is academic. And so I think when I'm in the ballet studio with students, the biggest reason that I need relationships with each student is because they're standing in front of me and I'm standing in front of them as embodied people. And we are using our bodies to create this form. And so much of that is about being able to be vulnerable, putting your body forward in front of someone. And then my job is to offer feedback and give constructive criticism and perhaps use tactile feedback where I actually touch their bodies. But the way that feedback operates and the way that the feeling or perception of being judged for your body, there's potential for that to be really damaging inside of a studio dance training environment. It's been kind of been made Hollywood in some settings when you see movies or television shows that feature dancers in dance classes and they're being screamed at by the director or something terrible. That is possible in that environment. And so it is in any setting where I was with people in their bodies, I would want to be as empathetic as possible because I was there. Like I trained that way as in my own background. So I have this understanding of what it's like to put yourself forward for criticism. Mm-hmm. And so as I build relationships with individuals, I'm able to be really engaged with them as far as what their own goals are for it. You know, what are you after? What would you like to attain with this? How can I help you with that? How can I support you in that? I'm not going to be the one to tell anybody that their body is wrong because that's just detrimental and works backward against the idea of developing an artist. They need support and encouragement and challenge. And I think that can all happen, but it happens for me most effectively when I know them really well, mm-hmm. when I know what their interests are and how they conceive of the work that they're doing.
Yeah, I coach boys and girls golf, and mm-hmm. with the girls, I need to be aware of how body is perceived. And, you know, with golf, we have girls who are long and lean, and we have the short and stout. We have everything in between.
Right.
And, it's something that I need to be very intentional and very aware of, but also very affirming mm-hmm. of how mm-hmm. Their bodies play into how they can play, and each body can be used in different ways to play well. Just like with dance, each body shape can be utilized to create different effects.
Right.
So yeah, I agree. I think that's awesome that's an aspect that you approach your students very individualized with the body and affirm those body types.
Yeah, I mean they're all so different. It's kind of like. And it's the same thing in a classroom. It would be the same thing mm-hmm. in a traditional classroom, that every student mm-hmm. learns differently. Every student's background and context is different. And so we approach them as individuals, even though they're learning maybe the same material.
Right. And it's pretty clear, like, which ones are going to be successful beyond in that given area and which ones are not, or which ones have learned a lot in this area and can use it in other areas. But it's pretty clear, and
sure.
I think most people, most people are pretty clear. Like, hey, I'm cut out for this, or I'm not, and I've learned quite a bit in the process. I can use this through the rest of my life. So, I think that's one of the cool things.
I find that fascinating.
What about?
Yeah, the students I work with, I have the same students for mm-hmm. 4 years in our program. In higher ed, and they they come in and they often across those 4 years will have this sort of period of, I want to say meltdown, but it's not quite that dramatic. It's just a reconsideration of like, what do I want to do with this now that I have all of this information? And they start reconsidering their mm-hmm. career goals. And a lot of them will come in from wanting to be professional dancers in a company to, you know, I have a student who just graduated who's going to go to OT school. Mm. And students who go into dance therapy and students who go into all sorts of dance related fields that are not performance based. Yeah. And then we have a whole bunch who do go into performance based dance companies. And so it's a variety, but I love that variety. I feel like it's so enriching, and it's enriching for the students who do want to be performers to see what other possibilities are there. And for those students who are not going into the performance track to be able to work with the students who are. And so I love the variety. And I find such value in the diversity of intention. Mm-hmm. In one room.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I love about being a classroom teacher and a golf coach is, you know, I get kids from so many different backgrounds, abilities, and so forth. And it's just a pleasure when we bring all these people together and rely on the strengths of each person.
Right. Absolutely.
So how has being intentional in developing relationships transformed your classroom and your students?
So it's changed my whole system of values as a teacher, but I've also noticed that it's changed the sort of temperature or tone of my classes because the goals seem different now. I'm a lot slower in my pacing because I spend more time on interpersonal things. I spend the first 5 minutes of every class kind of easing us into material. I spend time after class talking to people. I spend time during class. I let tangents sort of happen as they do. We laugh a fair amount, especially in dance is a funny thing. It's like if it's in the studio or not, working with the body is always funny because there are always awkward moments or moments where you kind of scratch your head and go, I don't know how that just happened, but now it's gone. and it'll never happen that way again, you know? So I think there are some ways in which it has lightened the mood. It's allowed students to find, and me, to find moments of joy that maybe we wouldn't have otherwise found, just to enjoy what we're doing for the sake of doing it, not because there's this intense pressure to perform or compete, because we know how one another mm-hmm. are feeling that day. We tend to one another more as individual people, and we spend time developing a community mm-hmm. in the room, and that becomes important. So part of the learning on the outcome end of it is that we learn what it means to learn in community, as opposed to just now I'm checking these boxes that I know these things and I have these skills. It's like, well, what did I, and a lot of, I think what is learned in these courses is not something that can be articulated right away. I often don't hear about some of the ways in which, or some of the things that they take away until maybe after they graduate. And sometimes it's years later where they step into a teaching role themselves and they go, wow, I had no idea I learned this, but I did. And this is, you know, how this is my value system now. So it goes well beyond content. The content almost becomes secondary, and we try to build skill sets that allow them to access that content in any way going forward. So that it's not that they missed out on it, it's that they found a way to work on content through community.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going through a coaching program right now with a group of coaches in my district called three-dimensional coaching. And the first dimension is the physical skill. Mm. You know, most people who are involved in coaching in one way, shape, or form are good at that.
Right.
The second dimension is building a team. And that's something that many coaches know how to do.
Right.
But the third dimension is building the individual. And that's the piece that that is the hardest, that most coaches don't. And I was asked to go through an exercise through this program. And oh my God, it was one of the most beautiful yet most difficult things I've ever had to do as a coach. And I was asked to go back to some of my athletes that had moved on and ask them, what was it like to be coached by Aaron Blackwelder? And oh my gosh, I cried harder than I ever had with these text messages and phone calls. And it was absolutely amazing to hear about how the relationships really shaped the person as an adult. And if you haven't done that yet, I would challenge you to do that.
Right. That's really beautiful. Like that's an exercise I think that a lot of us could use. It's funny because I think because this particular semester ended with so little fanfare, as we sort of all dwindled away from our strange online shift, a lot of our graduating seniors have reached back in the last week. Like they took a couple weeks away and they're starting to, things are starting to sort of gel for them in their life. Like now they've finished school. They're starting to accept that they finished it alone at home. And they're starting to put the pieces together and reach out. And some of the emails I've received have just been stunning. And I likewise have just been, you know, brought to tears immediately by certain ways that they have synthesized their education. And I think the time away from it to be able to look back and acknowledge what they've learned is really important. I mean, I kind of think as much as I find student evaluations at the end of the semester very helpful, I know there are lots of controversial opinions about them. For me as a teacher, they're very helpful because they feel like a register of the student experience immediately after it's happened. And that feels important to me to acknowledge, but it also definitely leaves out the time that it takes for us to do the kind of reflection on what I actually learned, like what actually is left after 5 years away from this course or, you know, 5 years away from the relationship that I had built with this person. What do I really take away from them? And sometimes that doesn't really materialize for quite some time. So I love that exercise. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Well, if you do it, I'd love to hear the results.
I'll share them with you. Absolutely.
So this is what I'm really curious about. I've seen some of the tweets that you've done. I've read your blog post on Teachers Going Gradeless. And I'm excited about your blog that you started. And I'm hoping that this is something that you'll develop. But what do you do to help build relationships in your classroom?
So, it's a funny, I had been reading, I was reading some of Donald Schoen a while ago. And I realized as I was reading it, I said, oh, that's what I do. That's what I do. He talks about this sort of process that it's a temporal approach to reflection in teaching. And it happens both before and during and after the actual experience of being in a class. And I realized that I think any of us could probably hook what it is that we do to this sort of time frame. So there are things that happen before class, there are things that happen during class, and there are things that happen after class that all contribute to this relationship building. Of course, after class, you walk away and you go, oh, that worked really well, or that didn't work at all, and I need to adjust that next time. And there's that immediate reflection after the fact. And the before, the anticipatory for me has now become not just what am I going to bring to class today, what am I teaching today, but as I'm preparing material, I'm thinking about individual students in the room, like, oh, she may struggle with this a little bit because she's been fighting that, you know, that pirouette on that one side has been difficult for her. So maybe I'll give this, when I give this, I have to remember to really attend to her in this exercise so that she feels supported. So there are ways in which I can, or that I've started really thinking about individual students as I'm putting class material for the day together. I suppose in a classroom, it could be similar. It's like if you're doing an exercise on writing, who's struggling in what ways in their writing, and how might certain ideas pertain more to certain people, and how might then the students who are a little stronger in those areas be able to help? And you get that student-student interaction in some pretty useful ways. But thinking about the individual students in my preparation, so that by the time I get to the room, I can kind of look at them and say, oh, right, no, this is for you specifically. And they, when students feel seen, I think they will follow you to the ends of the earth. And it's not that you want them to follow you necessarily. It's just a matter of they understand that you support them, and they find this motivation that seems to come out of their want to work with someone who supports them. It's a real mentorship thing, I think, more so than like teacher student. I always think of like mentor, mentee in this environment. And so once I walk into the classroom, I'm looking at them. I'm really spending time observing, at least in the first few minutes, as they're kind of getting settled. Definitely, observation is huge. Is somebody walking into the room having just gotten off the phone and looking very dejected or sad? Or are a few people just giggling like crazy? Maybe something fun happened. Or, you know, what is their, maybe somebody's very intentional about their preparation that day and kind of serious and off by themselves. You know, how is that? How am I going to bring all those parts together? I have a student on the right side of the studio having a meltdown, and I have a student on the left side of the studio having a fantastic class, and I have to engage them both at the same time. And so there's a little bit of being just hyper aware of them and what might be happening without over inserting myself into their lives. But, you know, walking over in the first, there's an exercise that starts every ballet class. It's called pliés, and it means to bend. And it's basically they're all stationary, they're holding onto a bar, and it's just a longer series of bending that happens to start every ballet class since, you know, 200 years ago. So we always do that, and they're stationary. And because they're in the same place and it's quiet, there's music playing and they're all doing the same thing, I walk around the room and I touch base with every single person in the room during that exercise. So whether it's a little bit of tactile feedback, or whether it's a hi, how are you, or whether it's a how's your ankle today, or something so that they feel seen right away, that they know that I am acknowledging their presence in the room from the beginning. In a classroom, it might just be a, hi, how are you? Or are you, you know, what your snack looks delicious. What is that? You know, some kind of a foray, an extension of my energy to them, to each of them, at the beginning of every class, just so that they know that I see them.
And how would teachers of other content areas benefit from centering their class around relationship building?
I think it, I don't know that content really has an effect on it. I think knowing, if learning is really the goal, then knowing the learner is essential to the learning happening. I just think you have to know where they're coming from so that you know where to meet them to help them learn from where they are.
Well, you hear that where somebody says, or the teacher says, it's my job to teach, it's your job to learn.
Right.
I just think that just does so much damage to it.
Absolutely.
To the foundation of a relationship, which learning is a relationship-based scenario.
Right. And I mean, I think it depends on what your goal is as the teacher. I think if your goal is to be, to get accolades, then great. But if really learning, student learning and progress is your goal, then that's, then you have to know where they are and where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And accolades will follow. That's,
if that's your goal. Yeah.
So what are some resources you would recommend for those interested in centering more on relationship in their classroom?
So, I mean, I think the educational philosophers are, I think they have it right. I think bell hooks has her education trilogy, teaching to transgress, teaching community, and teaching critical thinking are three just extraordinary works. And she she's a disciple of Freire. And so of course, Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed is important as a foundational piece. Nell Noddings has a whole, has built her career on the idea of care in education. And then other, I mean, Donald Schoen, I think was really relevant for me in a particular way. Max Van Manen talks about the sort of in loco parentis situation. He's, I think, more with children, but you know, college students are someone's child. I don't treat them like children, right. But I'm always aware that I'm working with someone else's child, and not that I'm trying to parent them, but that there's a preciousness about how you treat and respect and care for someone else's child and just them as individual people. And I think those writers all speak to that.
Learning for the sake of learning can be satisfying, but learning for the sake of investing in the well-being of one's community, that's meaningful. Building a community of learners in our classroom challenges our students to become engaged citizens. It is the hidden curriculum that teaches responsibility, empathy, and advocacy. As teachers, we create a culture that prepares students for the greater world, and that culture we create in our classroom determines the culture of the future. For more information about Dr. Zeller, visit beyondthecurriculumpodcast.com and check out the show notes. If you enjoyed this program, be sure to hit the subscribe button, as you will want to catch each and every episode. And remember to leave a rating and review. I appreciate your support, and it helps others find the show. I'd like to encourage you to partner with me through my Patreon page. Your support will help offset the cost of producing this podcast and bring more meaningful opportunities that take learners beyond the curriculum.